What's up, everybody, and welcome to the Lawyer You Know podcast. I'm your host, attorney Peter Tragos, and on this podcast, we break down the trials and cases you care most about so that you can understand how the American criminal and civil justice system works. We try to make sure you understand your rights by answering your questions as, well, a lawyer that you know. So we want to walk you through this process, and we can do it together. Make sure you get in the comments or in the chats to ask the questions that have been burning in your minds. And while this is not legal advice, it's always exciting. So buckle up for another episode of The Lawyer You Know. What's up, everybody? A lot going on in the background tonight as we start the stream after day 13, including jury selection of Alec Murdoch's trial. And we're a little late for a couple of reasons. Number one, it was a busy night. And Yes. The kids were in bed again late tonight because they had all sorts of stuff after school today. It was a busy one. And then after I got home, I tried to put together a quick timeline. As most of you know, I am an ideas guy. I'm an execution guy. I'm a rah-rah guy, a bring people together guy. I am not artistic. I am not musically inclined. I am not in any way the person that would create graphics for anything. So trying to get a little help from John to see if we can make it look a little bit better for our timeline that we're going to talk about tonight, because I do think it will be helpful for us to have something to visualize this timeline, visualize the gaps. There might be some stuff I'm forgetting to add into this timeline, and we can talk through that tonight. But some of what I put in here will at least give us some arguments each side can make. As far as what happened when, what is the most reasonable explanation for what happened at what time? And what's interesting is we're going to hear today as well possibilities. Is this possible? Is that possible? And I think it's important to remember that that is not good enough for the Attorney General's office. It's just not good enough. And I think that as we remember that and we go through this case, that is why sometimes it sounds like I might be harder on the prosecution, because it was your choice as the prosecutor to bring these charges. It seems to me like you have slam dunks 99 times over with financial crimes, but they chose to bring these murder charges. So we have to be harder on them. We are on the defense's side because the defendant is presumed innocent until the prosecutor forces us over to their side by proving it to us beyond a reasonable doubt. And that's why I think it's really important to remember that as we go through today's evidence and testimony, and we look at this timeline later on in the video. But let's get to the witnesses today. It's not a ton of witnesses and not a ton of testimony, but there was some really interesting stuff. And we started, honestly, I don't think she was anywhere near one of the most important witnesses of the trial, but I think there was some importance to her, but she was just one of my favorite witnesses. I felt like she was incredibly smart, knew her craft, stayed in her lane, was very meticulous and detailed, and was just very honest. She wasn't trying to press for the prosecution. She wasn't trying to fight with the defense. Nobody was going to win arguing GSR with her. And I'm talking about the GSR expert. Nobody was going to win if you argue GSR with her, because she knows what happened, what she did, why it happened, what the possibilities are, what the probabilities are. So I thought that that was, she was a really good witness. But let's talk a little bit about today, starting with the cross-examination of her, because that's how we started the day today, because yesterday we ended with her still on direct examination. And today the cross-examination of her is what kind of started the day. So we know how gunshot residue works. It's been explained to us multiple times throughout this trial. But what's interesting is when she explains that, yes, there was some GSR on Alec Murdoch's hands and on his shorts and on his shirt, but she explains to us what that is more consistent with. So let's, I shouldn't have done that. All right, let's watch a little bit of this together. A lot going on here. A lot going on. All right, here we go. We can listen to it on normal speed.
Sure.
Yes.
You're at 3 particles from the shorts?
Yes.
No particles from the shoes?
Yes.
And there was no particles on Mr. Murdoch's hands?
There was one particle on his right hand.
I'm sorry. There was one particle on his hand. And you would agree that that amount of primer residue, gunshot primer residue found on an individual who you had been informed had a firearm in his hand when the police arrived, that it was consistent with the transfer from a firearm?
When I analyzed the evidence, I did not know that he had a firearm in his hand, but that would be consistent with somebody who had a firearm in his hand prior to collection.
There you go. So the GSR that was on his hand is pretty clearly, just from the fact that he had the shotgun, he may have laid it in his lap, and it was not what you would expect if somebody fired multiple firearms multiple times at close range. You would have expected a lot more. So I think that was really important. And then there was another point made by her. We talked a little bit about, you know, whether you'd expect that shirt to be musty and smell like detergent, but she actually looked at it the same day that it was collected and just one day after he wore it, just hours in there. We kind of already talked about that. Somebody's saying it sounds much better. I don't know if we changed mics. Same mic, but I don't know. Maybe I'm closer to it or not as close to it. I don't know. But I thought there was a really interesting discussion, and this is kind of going to be discussions for both of them, is what is possible? What does the GSR tell us is possible? And let's listen to her explain to the defense attorney first with his hypothetical, and then the prosecutor with his hypothetical. And while it may seem like the prosecutor scored points with his hypothetical, you really don't want to be getting into a hypothetical argument in a criminal case beyond a reasonable doubt. If all this stuff is possible and you're not proving, like I said, what is true beyond a reasonable doubt, you're losing if you're the prosecutor. And I think they're going to win, just to be clear, because of all the financial stuff, but you don't win arguments like this.
There's no way for you to know when the gunshot primer residue was deposited on the blue rain jacket.
That's correct.
It could be at any point in time from the date that blue rain jacket was manufactured, right?
Well, probably not on the manufacturer date, unless they were firing guns in the manufacturing plant, but any time after a consumer takes possession, probably.
So if a consumer took possession of that garment 4 years ago, and we're going to talk about how you can get gunshot primer residue on it, but unless it's cleaned off or washed off, it'll stay for 4 years.
It could, yes.
And you have no idea.
That's really important to me, that this GSR could have literally been there for 4 years. And that's an expert opinion. So some people may think, oh no, it's got to come off. It's got to wash off. It's got to, the turning the air on in the car would blow some GSR around or whatever. She's like, no, it could still be there 4 years later. And there are certain things that make it even more probable or plausible than it just being there for 4 years. So let's listen to some of those possibilities and probabilities.
How gunshot primer residue ended up on that garment, correct?
I cannot tell you how it got there.
Okay. Or when it got there.
Or when it got there.
So she's the state's expert, and she can't tell you how or when the GSR got anywhere in this case.
Or whether it was being worn when it got there, whether it was being worn inside out when it was deposited on there, or whether it was laid on top of a gun, for example.
I cannot tell you any of those scenarios.
Okay. So if Mr. Randolph Murdoch, are you aware that this rain jacket was found in a closet in September of 2021 at Mr. Randolph Murdoch's home?
That was the information that was on the submission, yes.
And he died, I think, on June 10th, 2021. Were you aware of that?
I remember hearing news about it.
But if if he, before he got into his truck, had taken off this poncho and flipped it over and threw it on the back seat of his truck where he kept his shotgun Bo Whoop, and it laid on top of this dirty old shotgun, it could have deposited 38 particles of gunshot primer residue, right?
If the shotgun was not clean, there is a potential for the transfer off of that shotgun, yes.
So, raincoat, and it's large, and I believe that Randolph was larger than Alec, but they haven't really gotten into that. Large raincoat in Grandpa's closet, has gunshot residue. He's talking about Bo Whoop, and he does it specifically because they want to normalize that everybody's got guns. Don't convict this guy because he's got a bunch of guns. But also, I was just reading a very interesting comment that I'm going to come back to later. So when you talk about having all these shotguns and we have clothes with GSR on it, that is very normal for these people. Every single person they've called up that was friends with Paul, that was a lawyer in the firm or worked in the firm, they all have guns. They all hunt and fish together. They all go to the Moselle property and they hunt. And Randolph had a shotgun that he named. Paul always had the guns in his car. Randolph probably always had the gun in his car. He had Bo Whoop in his backseat. If he threw the raincoat on the backseat 4 years ago and then took the raincoat inside and put it in his own closet, that's a pretty good argument for how that GSR got on the inside of that raincoat, if you ask me.
And if the gun, if Bo Whoop hadn't been cleaned in years, there would be...
Your Honor, objection. What's he saying?
Bo Whoop.
Bo Whoop.
Your Honor, objection. What's he saying?
B-O-W-H-O-O-P, the name of Mr. Randolph Murdoch's shotgun. If that shotgun hadn't been cleaned in years, it'd be more likely you would get gunshot residue deposited on anything that came on top of it, right?
The transfer would be more likely, yes, sir.
There you go. If it's a dirty gun, if it's an old gun, if you never cleaned it, that evidence is not necessarily in. I haven't heard anybody name Bo Whoop. I know they've talked about the gun that Paul had all the time and things like that. But so I think he made a pretty good argument right there that very likely Grandpa's raincoat could have had Grandpa's GSR from Grandpa's old dirty gun. And again, that's just one explanation. But then the prosecutor gets up on redirect and he goes through his own hypothetical with his GSR expert of how it was very unusual to get the GSR on the inside of the raincoat and what some explanations for that could be that are good for the prosecution.
Outside.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And when you wear that garment, do you typically wear it insides, inside? Is that what it means?
I would think so.
And... And he asked you, is it a possibility that a firearm come in contact with the rain jacket? And you said it's possible. It's really possible. Those numbers are unusual, aren't they? 38.
For the interior of a garment, I would think that they were unusual, yes.
And that's common sense.
They're just not.
What is it? I'm sorry. But how do you describe that in your world, everyday living?
The defense actually won a couple of objections today, and that was one of them. We're going to mention another one later.
And you're examining it. How do you describe those particles inside of a garment that you're supposed to wear with the outside?
Well, typically people wear their clothing right side out. And so if they're in the vicinity to the discharge of a shooting, that's where the particles are going to land.
On the outside?
Yes, sir.
Typically, it's worn the right way, and typically when you shoot, the particles get on the outside of the jacket. I think we all know that, and I think that's proving a point for the defense. So the explanation of him wearing it over his clothes is gone. So they really only have one other explanation, which they're going to get to now as a possibility. Brad, money well spent by Alec, I guess, if that's the case.
And Mr. Griffin asked you about I think a hypothetical, if Scranton's father's gun had laid on it, was in a truck, would the 38 particles inside of the rain jacket be consistent with a recently fired firearm being contained inside?
It could be, yes.
I mean, she's not even that excited about that question. She's like, it could be, yes, because he uses the words like recently fired firearm. And she's already made it pretty clear with her expert opinion that you can't tell how long GSR has been. So it could have happened from a recently fired firearm or a firearm that was fired 4 years ago that still has GSR on the outside and it got transferred to the raincoat. She has made that very clear. The GSR in this case does not prove anything beyond a reasonable doubt. It does not prove that the jacket was thrown over Bo Whoop. It doesn't prove that anything was wrapped in the jacket. It does not prove anything. It doesn't prove that it happened on the day after the event. It doesn't prove it happened on the day of the murders. It doesn't prove that it happened in September. It could have happened anywhere between June and September when it was actually found. So I think she was really honest. The state did at least get a possibility that's good for them out as well. And we weren't just left with the only possibility was with the defense. But I said to keep it riding for a little bit longer. Let's see what else. There was something else I wanted to talk about.
With a recently signed firearm being carried inside of that rain jacket.
Just inside the rain jacket. I don't know that it matters if you're carrying it.
Okay. Well, you're very technical and precise. Okay. But if you were carrying it and you had a gun inside that rain jacket that had recently been fired and you were taking it somewhere to hide it or transport it, would the 38 particles inside the rain jacket be?
She's literally smirking
the 38
because she knows where he's going with it. He's telling the state's theory and asking if that's possible. And of course, she's going to say it's possible, but this by no means proves it. And I just think it's interesting that we've had so much of this. And I saw Brianna Cece in the comments earlier say state wins cases all the time on circumstantial evidence and possibilities. Sure they do. I just don't think the possibilities should be the reason that they win it.
Inside the rain jacket be consistent with transfer from a recently fired firearm?
That is a possibility, yes, sir.
All right. So let's answer a couple questions here that have to do with this witness. Not small guns to hide in a tarp. It would be obvious. I agree. And the witness that saw him come in with the tarp/raincoat said there was nothing in it. No shovel handle, no gun, no nothing. Azam, 198K subs. Woohoo. Let's get Peter to 200 by the end of the week. Yes. Go ahead and sub. Tell your friends to sub. Let's get to 200,000. My kid's personal Uber driver. You're so close to 200K. Get a sub counter like EDB. Maybe we will get one tomorrow. Maybe tomorrow night's live, we'll get one. Once we get to like 199,000, then maybe we'll get a sub counter. That'll be fun. John O'Rourke, wild random thought. Could this threat towards the courthouse actually help AM's case? The jurors now know someone random was trying to continue to hurt AM. The jurors will find out what happened. They probably will find out what happened, but the judge did not tell them. I guess theoretically it could help because they're saying, oh, maybe somebody's threatening him again. Maybe that was what happened with Maggie and Paul. So it could help. I don't think it's likely to. I think they're probably getting close to making up their mind one way or the other. Jamie H. Keep thinking someone went to the kennels looking for just to discover he had left PM. Oh, so looking for Alec and PM and MM seen a person with guns and shot them since they had been seen with guns. So interesting. They came for Alec, but they took it out on his family. Knight Rider. I think the prosecutor is getting far too much into the weeds and losing the jury. It's like a trial within a trial. It is, but he looks like such a scumbag with all of the financial evidence against him. I don't know how you could possibly not hate this guy if you listen to it. It's really hard for a jury to separate these things when you're hearing all these crimes he's committed and you're there in a criminal trial to determine whether he's guilty or not guilty. And you're thinking he's definitely guilty. But is he guilty of the right crimes? You're there to determine. I see you. Long guns like rifles and shotguns tend to leave less GSR on shooters than handguns. Bernadette Durkin. Hi, Peter. Could you try and explain about the GSR part? Do you have to fire a gun? Do you not have to use the gun and fire the gun? Or is GSR left on a gun from the last shots or not shot for 2 to 3 weeks, still have it on him? Yes. So the GSR comes out when the gun's fired, but any gun that's fired could have GSR on it, and the GSR could stay as long as it's not cleaned off, even for 4 years, like she said, and could be transferred from the gun to the raincoat or to his clothes or anything like that. LMF3. Been with you since Depp v. Heard. Your stream only gets better and better. I turn off my Netflix series when I get the Lawyer You Know reminder bell. Look forward to your stream each night. Your insight. Great, great job, Peter. Thank you. This is awesome. This comment makes it fun. Makes it really fun to do this, knowing that people enjoy it and look forward to it and pause even their Netflix series to come hang out for a little bit. Marjorie Haskins, so grateful for an independent option for trials other than mainstream media. Thanks for taking the time to do this for us. Thank you for being here, Marjorie. And I thought, Ashley, this is the one that kind of made me laugh earlier when I was reading through it. Also, if you think Peter is biased, go watch his videos from before the trial. Peter was trying so hard to believe innocent until proven guilty. It just shows how big of a fail this trial is. If you go watch my videos on Alec Murdoch and Tom Girardi, these are probably the two criminal defendants that I am most unfair to because they are personal injury plaintiffs, lawyer like myself, who took advantage of injured victims who needed them in the worst way and trusted them with everything. And I just can't tell you how many of my clients say, do whatever you think is best. And that's exactly what they did, but they did what was best for them. And they're both scumbags, if you ask me. So it is hard for me, but that just shows you how poor of a job I think the investigation and the prosecutors, not the prosecutors' lawyering is not bad, but I don't think they have enough in this case. So far, still more yet to come. All right. The next witness was Annette Griswold, Alec Murdoch's paralegal. He had two paralegals. They went through the structure. They went through how the boat crash was weighing heavy on him. They talked about the forged settlements. They talked about how she was out on medical leave. Her family member was on medical leave and this was an opportunity for Alec to be able to steal the money without her noticing because she wasn't double checking what he was doing in the cases and she knew the cases and it was easy for somebody that was helping out to miss something on the cases. Just like if she was working on somebody else's case, she might not know if something missing or something was weird or going on. To me, again, I'm just thinking through this process and I'm thinking, how did the clients not speak up? Like, you get a release in a case that says they are settling this case for $100,000 or whatever it is for full and final settlement. So they have to sign the release. Then there's a settlement statement. I mean, he just must have been skipping so many steps at the end and probably forging so many documents and signatures to get away with this. And again, it just blows my mind that this was able to happen for so many years. Here's the other objection. There was a text between Vicky and Annette, and objection hearsay, and the judge actually sustained it. So that objection did not come in. The daughter overheard her talking about she was going to turn Alec in and she was worried. She said, you better dust off your resume. She worked for him for 9 years. The Ferris fees were the furthest thing from her mind once the murders occurred. And, you know, she totally forgot about it and wasn't going to press money because they all came together as a family, like they've talked about before, until September, when it all came up again. Then the text to Christy and her, Annette, got objected to by the defense. 403, 404B, talking about drug use and rehab and all that. Even though we've heard about the pills, we've heard about drugs, we've heard about rehab, I think already, at least in the questions. So it was kind of strange that they made this big deal about trying to keep it out. And a lot of you said, oh, well, Harpulian shouldn't have gone on the news and been talking about drug addiction and drugs, try to get people to feel bad for Alec so much. he shouldn't have done that maybe if he didn't want them to. If he didn't want that to come into the trial, the judge overrules it and allows it to come in. And the defense just kind of goes full hog, talks about rehab. I think they're going to talk about drugs. I think they're going to try to make the jury feel bad. I think they're going to try to make the jury think this is why he was stealing money. Not any other reason, not because he was a scumbag, because he was struggling with drug addiction. And he had been struggling with it for 20 years. So if you struggle with something for 20 years, you don't just all of a sudden kill your family. I think the defense is going to lean in to this as they kind of already have. I think they made that objection to protect it for the appeal, but I think they always knew it was coming in and they're ready for it. And they've been ready for a lot of stuff that's come in. All right. So then in an interesting move by the state, this is what they have the witness do with the text from Alec Murdoch.
Video?
I do. I hear three voices.
And tell me who you hear.
I hear Paul Murdoch,
Maggie Murdoch and Elliot Murdoch.
And how sure are you?
So somebody that knows him for 9 years, knows his voice, confirms again, that is his voice at the kennel in the Snapchat video at 8:44. We'll get to more of that later when we talk timeline.
I'm 100% sure.
Can I have the elmo one more time, please?
I'm sorry.
Oh. Going back to States 441. Can you read just that one sentence starting where my finger's pointing that the defendant sent to you?
The worst part is knowing I did the most damage to those I love the most.
So when I heard that, when I heard just that, and you tell me, what did you think when you just heard that? Put it in the comments. I thought it meant his family. He hurt his family, those closest to him. And that's what he feels so broken up about. But later, the defense has her read the entire text message, which I think came out looking great for the defense. And we've already seen and heard the defense say stuff like, they didn't want to show you this body cam footage on direct, but we're going to play it now on cross, which is improper. But you better believe they're going to argue they were pulling stuff out of context. They didn't want you to see the whole thing. That's probably more proper, arguing they're pulling stuff out of context. And when you see the whole thing, you get the full context. That's proper and that's fine. And I think that that's exactly what they're going to do here. And they're going to say the prosecutors were trying to use this in a way that was not even how it was meant by Alec, to try to make him look worse. But he wasn't even talking about his family in this. And that was clear if you read the entire text message.
And you mentioned in what's in evidence as defendant's exhibit number 441. Is a text that you received from Alec, right?
That's correct.
And is was it just to you, or was it you and...
me and Christy, his other secretary.
The other secretary. And the date is Sunday, September 26th at 4:30 p.m. in the afternoon?
Yes, sir.
And you mentioned it was from rehab?
Yes. As far as I knew, it was rehab. I assumed it was probably one of the steps of reaching out to those that you hurt and telling them you're sorry.
And Alec was in rehab?
Yes, sir. As far as I know, he was.
Okay. And I want you to read this to the jury, the whole email, if you don't mind.
Okay, sure.
Here I said the whole email. It's technically a text message, but he said the whole email. Read that to the jury.
Hey, it's Alec. I'm finally feeling a little better each day. I'm over the worst, but still feel like I have the flu. Real weak. I have been worried about y'all, and I'm sorry I didn't get to tell y'all myself. I know both of you been hurt badly by me. I know it sounds hollow, but I am truly sorry. The better I get, the more guilt I have. I have an awful lot to try to make right when I get out of here. The worst part is knowing I did the most damage to those I love the most. I'm not real sure how I let myself get where I did. I'm committed to getting better and hope to mend as many relationships as I can. You both are special people and important to me. Please know how sorry I am to have made you part of my misdeeds. I hope you are doing as well as possible. I love you very much. Please tell Cheryl and Haley hello, and I'm sorry. All my love.
Thank you. That's all the questions I have, Your Honor.
So we're going to watch the redirect here, but pretty clearly written specifically to them as people he loves and was close to, and some of the people that he loved the most. This was directed to these two individuals that worked for him that he also said he loved. And to me, that context makes it look like the state wanted it to say one thing, but it actually potentially said another. And it's just another piece of evidence that it's like, what does that actually prove? What does that actually prove? And I also felt like she gave no motive, no connection. We heard about what a scumbag he was. We heard about all of the financial crimes that he committed. The only thing she said is, oh, I wasn't going to ask him about money right after this happened to him, except that I did a month later. So again, I'm not feeling the connection there very much, but now is when Waters, the prosecutor, really digs deep here And again, let's remember that these financial crimes are supposed to prove motive. They are not at all supposed to prove the character of Alec Murdoch. They are not supposed to prove he's a bad guy. This is not character evidence. So tell me, as you watch Mr. Waters' redirect here, does this sound like he's trying to prove motive? Or does this sound like he's trying to prove Alec Murdoch is, in fact, a scumbag?
Think further.
Mr. Griffin asked you about whether or not you were worried about losing your job over these Ferris fees. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
And then he asked you, the defendant lost his job, right?
That's correct.
After the murders, but before September, the defendant still had his job, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
He still had his law license, didn't he?
Yes, sir.
You said in response to defense counsel's...
And he lost them a couple months after the murder. So I don't get that. But that's not the part I was talking about. We're getting there.
Question that people came to him if they needed something,
absolutely,
correct?
Yes, sir. He was trusted by everybody. And they knew that if they needed something, all they had to do was reach out and he was going to help them.
So I don't want to miss the punchline here, so we're going to back up. But is that supposed to be bad? If I'm the juror, I'd be like, huh, okay, it seems like a pretty decent guy. But Waters does not want them to think he's a pretty decent guy.
They knew that if they needed something, all they had to do was reach out and he was going to help them.
He was trusted by everybody. Did you trust him?
I trusted him. Yes, sir.
People came to him for anything, like all these clients right here?
Yes, sir.
He was a prominent lawyer?
Yes, he was.
One of the most prominent in the region?
Yes.
And all of that came to an end in September 2021 when all of that came out, did it not?
Right. When I found the check, I knew that he had lied to me and that he'd stolen that money.
All these people trusted him, and you hold up the packet of all the checks and all the cases that he stole funds from. All these people trusted him, and he throws it down, and it makes this slapping noise. He was a prominent lawyer. And that all came to an end in September. It's like, what does that have to do with murder? So instead of it happening in June, it happened in September? That's supposed to prove motive? No, you proved to me he's a scumbag. You did. You did it, Mr. Waters. You proved to me he's a scumbag. But I don't understand how that proves motive for murder. Just to me. If you guys think it does, and some of you do, totally fair. And I respect it, and I want to hear it in the comments. All right. Then we had Michael Gunn, which we've already heard his testimony. This is the forged consultants guy who later released a statement basically pointing the finger at Bank of America saying, if you would have just made a call to confirm all this, we could have saved a lot of people a lot of money. He explained how structured settlements work. He definitely wanted to back off and seem like he and Alec were not friends. And then on cross, they kind of made it seem like they were friends. They went to the wedding, got a snow day. They hung out even more. They hang out at conferences. he confirmed that all those fake forged fraud, theft, financial schemes were not in fact him. They were Alec Murdoch. He never gave Alec Murdoch permission to do this. Et cetera, exactly what you'd expect him to say. But on cross, they got out that Alec is a great family man with a great relationship with Paul, great relationship with Maggie for all intents and purposes. And he seemed like a really great guy. You know, that's basically what came out in cross-examination. So nothing too shocking or noteworthy there. Then we had the SLED agent, the forensic exam on the electronics. I think this was just to get the car stuff in so that the next guy, the FBI electronics engineer and analyst, he came and explained how they can get data from the car when it's turned on, when it's powered up, when it's put in park, taken out of park, when it's moving, when it's not. And that helps us put together a timeline. But before we get to the timeline, let's answer a few more questions. And as we go through these questions, if you could hit that like button, only 500-ish likes with 6,000 people, now 7,000 people in here. Let's get the likes up to like 5,000 likes. So all of you don't have to push it, just 5,000 of you push it. Everybody hit that subscribe button, because if there are 2,000 of you that are not subscribed, we can hit 200K tonight, which would be awesome. And I'll give away some memberships. If we hit 200,000 subscribers tonight, I'll give away some memberships, which is not even going to count to the 200,000 giveaways and things that we do. That'll just be extra. Maddle Wiseat X, is defense allowed to use the bomb threat in closing to refer to the danger and threats to AM for more reasonable doubt? I would say no, because there's no evidence that that was a threat on Alec Murdoch. There's no evidence that has any connection to this. So I would argue no, they can't. John O'Rourke, when are the closing statements supposed to be? That will be huge for the defense, aka the deal maker. I think we're still weeks away from closing. Lauren L, for those confused, significant equals scientific verbiage for outside the normal margin of error. One particle equals transfer or cross-contamination, 32, not so much. That's why she says that. Yeah, not significant like a large amount, but significant meaning extra, outside the normal margins. Jamie H, seems like some shady, questionable things going on at the law firm for a long time. Just AM got caught. I agree with you. And somebody else said, Devin said, there's no way that accountant kept her job. Other lawyers in the firm had to be stealing too, or else how could they let her keep her job after allowing this theft to go on for so long and costing them literally millions of dollars? Devin, I'm not going to say it was happening. I'm just going to say this is a possibility. This is a possibility. Kayla, how did no one else in the firm realize that this was sketchy? The Forge account for years, as early as 2011. Hey, you guys are smart people. You are smart people. You can read between the lines sometimes, and you don't just listen to the BS as people are all real sad on the stand now about what happened, and they really care about the victims and they care about all the people hurt. And Alec is the scumbag. Alec's the bad guy. Alec's the only one that was doing anything wrong, and we're picking up his mess and we're punishing him. Janet Moorcraft, at closing, defense should remind the jury not to collapse Alex's financial crimes with this murder. Evidence of financial crimes is not evident beyond a reasonable doubt for murder. Don't collapse the two. I think they are going to read that limiting instruction multiple times throughout closing. Francis Fitzgerald, thank you to you, your firm, and especially to Becca for all your help. Well, thank you, Francis. Becca is amazing. She is part of our intake team. And a lot of you guys call in case you don't know, I do practice full-time personal injury plaintiff's work. So if you're injured in a car accident or something like that, a slip and fall, some kind of catastrophic injury, feel free to call my firm. Feel free to email me, lawyeryouknow@gmail.com. This is what we do. And a ton of you have reached out. Sometimes it's in a jurisdiction we don't handle cases in, or it's a different kind of case, like an employment law case or something like that. And we will try to connect you with somebody that can help. If we know somebody in your jurisdiction that we trust, we will try to find a referral for you. So I want to be a resource to all of you that are connected through the channel. And we've gotten a lot of clients from the channel, and it's an awesome relationship to build. We kind of start out on step three instead of step one, because we feel like we already know each other because we hang out so often on the channel. Court K, his paralegal talked about how scattered and disorganized he is. I can't imagine someone like that could pull off a murder like this. Thank you. Now, there are very good lawyers that are like this, but I agree with you, and keep this in mind when we go through the timeline. Mary Claire, everything I hear, one of the state attorneys, I don't know his name. All I hear is the prosecutor from My Cousin Vinny. Thank you for all you do, Peter. I look forward to The Lawyer You Know each evening. Yeah, I agree with you. It's like the Utes. I think they're going to say the Utes at some point. Amy Lynn, why are they not focusing on Maggie's phone moving at the same time Alex's car is starting? He never slept there after the murders. Dialed 911 then again. I'm not positive Maggie's phone moving at the same time. That's like after 9 o'clock movement of Maggie's phone. John O'Reilly, can defense move for directed verdict at the closed prosecution case before having to decide whether to present evidence? They will move for what's called a judgment of acquittal, which is basically like a directed verdict, meaning the judge will throw the case out because no reasonable jury could ever find Alec Murdoch guilty based on that lack of evidence. What do you think the judge is going to do in this case? I'd bet my house he denies it. Terry, off topic, any plans to cover Lindsay Clancy? Interesting case and interested in hearing your thoughts on the medical defense points. I have not read a single thing about this. I don't know the first thing about this case. If you guys want me to look into this case, give me a follow on Instagram and Twitter and let me know. There is my handle at Tragos Law. Let me know in the messages and the DMs if you guys want to talk about that. Ronell, Peter, what influence will this trial have on the other financial charges, all the evidence being brought about in this trial? Prejudicial much? alarm set for 3:45 daily to watch. Thanks for your analysis. Appreciate it. Thank you, Ronell. I don't think it's going to have any effect on the other trials, except for the fact that if he gets convicted here, he's going to plea to those, I would think. Maybe not because he's going to appeal this if he does lose, but I think he might just plea to those charges. I mean, there's a lot of evidence against him. This is the one he wants to win for obvious reasons. Renee P. So they know about the drugs now. I'm still confused. How will they explain that he had stolen enough money to buy drugs for the whole town? Renee, that's a good question. Don, Peter, are you disgusted with all these corrupt lawyers that are turning up lately? Any wonder where, how things went wrong for them? Maybe they were like that since law school. It's greed, Don. It's greed. People can never have enough sometimes. And it's really despicable that they get put in positions of power with fiduciary responsibilities and they just throw it all away because they care about one thing, and that's being a big shot, having money, flaunting it. Although it seems like they were not as flashy, people say, but he's in private planes and stuff. I don't know. Tom Girardi for sure was flashy. I think it just comes down to greed, and you feel like you can do it and you feel like nobody's going to stop you, and you do it because you don't have actual morals yourself. And when the opportunity presents itself, you think, why not? Amy Lynn, state is beating the effing crimes to death. We get it. Where is the murder evidence? It's a huge stretch. No time, no reason. This made his life worse. That's for sure. And I think it's a good time to take that and get to the timeline. All right. So there's a specific way I was supposed to do this, and it doesn't work because I don't think it's going to work the way you wanted it to, John. Because if I hit play, it takes up my whole screen. But let me try this. Yeah, no. It doesn't work. So we're just going to leave it all up at once. Okay. So here's the timeline. And hopefully you guys can see that. Because I don't know how to play it and have it not be the whole screen. Yeah. Sorry. Okay, so here's the timeline, and let's talk about this together because I think it's really interesting. And I didn't put everything in the timeline, but I did want to at least put some of it in there so we could try to look at what each side could argue based on this timeline. And I think we're going to start at 8:40 because that's when Alec Murdoch was, you know, featured in that Snapchat video at 8:44. We know they're all three alive at that point. And I think it's pretty plausible that everybody is also still alive at 8:48 and 8:49 because there were text messages coming in and Maggie actually read the text message on her phone at 8:49. And then it was after 8:49, I believe, that neither of them ever used their cell phones again. So that's significant to me, and that's kind of where I'm going to put the time of death is somewhere between 8:55 and 9:03 because we know that there were text messages being read and steps being picked up all the way until 8:55. Okay? There were some that said 8:53. There was also some parts where they were saying, well, the steps might not be perfectly accurate, but if I am an ocean girl, I'll put this on there because a couple of you are saying this, and I agree with you. This is the biggest evidence for the state. Why did he lie? Why did he lie? And I agree with you. But if I'm making, so let's say if you're making an argument for the defense, you're going to say they were alive till 8:55 because it goes into your argument better. If you're the state, maybe you say 8:44 is the last time we really know they are alive because Alec Murdoch knew the password to Maggie's phone, so maybe he looked at her text message at 8:49, and she didn't even look at it, and Paul did not look at the text message he got at 8:48, so maybe they were already dead by then. Maybe it happened right after the Snapchat video, which is plausible. Yes, somebody could have taken steps with Maggie's phone. I agree with you, but it seems like the movement, the text messages, the use of the phones was all around the 8:50 to 8:55 mark, okay? So for the purposes of this discussion, 8:55 to 9:03, I think, is the best bet for when the murders occurred. I think Everybody can make arguments and different reasons, and that's fine. If you want to make your arguments in the chat, that's fine. But we know they were alive at 8:44 based on the video. Okay? So then we get to the aftermath and what we learned today. At 9:03 to 9:06, Alec Murdoch's car is on. So let's just say he committed the murders sometime between 8:05 and 9:03. At 9:06 to 9:22, his car is driving. And I've seen a lot of different reports that it takes anywhere from 15 to 20 minutes to get to his parents' house. Some people said 18. So two 16-minute drives to me is very likely to have been his drive to and from his mom's house. And it also fits in with Miss Shelley, who said he came 8:30, 9, 9:30. Well, it looks like he was there. The drive was 9:06 to 9:22, so he probably showed up to his mom's house about 9:22. And what did Miss Shelley say? He was there 15 to 20 minutes. And his car starts actually the first time at 9:43, but then it goes off, starts again or into park or out of park. It was kind of weird. There was a lot of like in and out of parks that I don't know what the state's going to try to show that that proves, but let's assume, okay, he leaves at 9:43 or 9:44. That's 21 or 22 minutes that he was at mom's house. Almost exactly what Miss Shelley said, but also only 8 or 9 minutes less than what Alec Murdoch said. And to me, I want to know why. So somebody said remote start. Okay, Megan, and I know you're not, I know you're saying that's a possibility. Can we prove that? Can the guy with all the, you know, background in FBI, I handle electronics and vehicles, did he say anything about remote start? I didn't hear him say anything about remote start. And even if it's remote start, it's when you move it out of park is what a lot of these are. So all of this fits in with the testimony. He drives to their house and he gets there between 9 and 9:30, which is exactly what Miss Shelley said. He gets there at 9:22-ish. He leaves at 9:43 or 9:44, so he's there for 15 to 20 minutes. And 16 minutes later, 9:44 to 10 o'clock, his car goes in park again. His car is in and out of running at 10:01. He tries to call Maggie at 10:03, so maybe he drove to the main house is what the defense is going to argue. And then as soon as he walks over to the kennels and sees the bodies at 10:06, he's calling 911. So this would mean he called her at 10:03. Why would he call her at 10:03? So I believe the story is going to be he drove back to the main house. He was at the main house. He called him and let him know he was going at, you know, 9:06 or whatever, told him he was going over to see mom, which again, the 9:06 call, I'm going to see mom, or text, I'm going to see mom, I think it was a text, fits in exactly when he went to see mom. But he could have already killed him again between 8:55 and 9:03. I just think if we're going to believe he committed these murders, we have to believe that between 8:55 and 9:06, okay, or let's say 8:49, 8:49, the last time a text message was read, and 9:06, what is that? 17 minutes. In 17 minutes, because we know for a fact, based on Miss Shelley's testimony and evidence, he shows up in his white shirt and green shorts and shoes with no blood, no nothing on him. These are the same shirt and shorts that were tested later to have little to no GSR, more in line with just holding a shotgun or putting a shotgun in your lap. We know that to be true, that he had all of that on when he arrives at 9:22. We also know it takes about 16 minutes to get there. So he didn't stop on the way and ditch the weapons. He didn't stop on the way and change his clothes and wash all the blood off of him. It would have taken a lot more time than 9:06 to 9:22. And we also know his car was in drive that whole time. It didn't get put back in park. Okay. Lynn is saying, yes, he did kill them at 8:53. Okay. So let's go with that theory. He kills them at 8:53. And he has ditched the weapons, ditched his clothes, cleaned up all the GSR off of him, cleaned up all the blood off of him, cleared out any footprints or anything that he may have had, all by 9:00. Is it 3 or 6 that he starts the car? What did I put here? 9:03, he starts the car. So in 10 to 13 minutes, we'll say, in Lynn's theory, in 10 to 13 minutes, he did all of that. Changed his clothes, ditched his clothes, ditched the weapons, cleaned the GSR off, cleaned the blood off. And there's not a trace of blood from him anywhere. Not in the house, not in the sink, not in the shower, not walking up the stairs, not at mom's house, nowhere. People are saying, yeah, it's possible. Okay. And a lot of the people in here, listen, this is kind of what I think. He certainly had help, maybe an accomplice stayed and cleaned up. Yeah, I agree. I think if somebody else was there, then this all makes a lot more sense. It all makes a lot more sense if someone else was there. Somebody just said, oh man, the chat is flying. Dr. Pamela, mom can shower and dress in 5 minutes or less. Not just that, she can shower and dress 3 people in 5 minutes or less. No, I agree with you, but can she do it covered in blood and GSR and not have any of that end up anywhere? That's the most amazing part to me. He must have had help or somebody else did it. I mean, Chrissy, this would be good news for the defense. Your comment like this, if you're on this jury, that would mean you'd have to vote not guilty. Because they have not put anything in to show that he's had help. The state does not think he had help. Ella B said he hired someone. Well, then you can't convict him of first degree intentional homicide. Because where's the evidence that there was a conspiracy or who he hired or how he hired them or how that all happened? I just think that's tough. I think that's really, really tough. And this is not at all a perfect timeline. There were a lot of other things, calls and texts and steps and stuff if you want to work it in. But if I'm the defense, this is the kind of timeline I put up. If I'm the state, I'm starting to figure out why they're not putting up a timeline. Because I think if they do put up a timeline, the period of time that's open, if you want to stretch it to from 8:40, I mean, let's just say 8:44 from the time of the video, to 9:06, when it seems pretty clear he was driving to his mom's, we have 22 minutes. That's the biggest window I think I can come up with if I'm the state. And I think it's possible to do all that in 22 minutes. And I think it's even more possible if you had someone help you clean up, but it doesn't seem like he made any calls to anybody or text anybody to go clean up. If he did do this, it was planned pretty well. It was planned, and here's my other thing, you know, just me being a skeptic. If he did plan this so perfectly, I find it so hard to believe that he would leave the casings, that he would leave the raincoat covered in GSR for 3 months in the mother's closet, which is where he said his alibi was, where he was, not like at John Marvin's house or something like that where nobody even knew he was there. And it's not like he went to his mom who had dementia and, you know, couldn't testify. Miss Shelley was there. He knew Miss Shelley was there. He called her. All right. I cannot wait to hear what you all think about this and what your questions and comments are on the timeline and other things. Dreamers Unlimited, I'm sorry, but he should walk on the murder. Like OJ, the cops, lawyers, and court should have to pay for the privilege they provided. When they learn to dish justice equally, then they can prosecute. River, Peter, would you ever want to be a judge? No. No way, no way, no way. It seems boring to me. Sarah Sutton, I don't think he killed them. I also would not be able to do this if I was a judge. I don't think he killed them. I think he owed unfriendly types of money and they cashed in on his family. He probably knows who did it. Yeah, I've heard this theory go around that it's like some kind of gang or cartel or something like that that he's mixed up in and he can't flip and he can't tell on them. And they did this to get to him because he owes them money. I've heard that kind of theory thrown around a lot as well. Judges, in my opinion, don't get the active fight and battle of a lawyer. They also don't get to deal with clients, which is a positive and a negative. There are difficult clients, but it's also awesome dealing with clients and helping people. So it's not really something I've ever been interested in, but I'm still pretty young. So who knows? Tammy Merrill. I thought her testimony about his messy office, losing and leaving things everywhere, doesn't sound like a man you can cover up and clean up a crime scene in half an hour. See, I think in people's heads, they're thinking, yeah, half an hour, maybe an hour. His phone was off for about an hour. So who the heck knows what happened for about that whole hour from 8 to 9. That's when the murders occurred. It's like, but we know stuff was happening at 8:44 and 8:48 and 8:49. And she was even still taking steps at 8:55. I don't think it was anywhere near half an hour. I think it was closer to 10 minutes. Beautiful, messy BQLL. AM didn't even know what habeas corpus was as per his jail phone calls. How was he such a prominent attorney? I don't get it. To be fair, lots of lawyers know a lot about what they're good at and not a lot about everything else. And it seems like he was more of a schmoozer and a deal maker and business getter than he was a student of the law. Dang, I thought for sure I was going to get this one done in an hour, but we might go a little bit over, but I'm going to go rapid fire now through the questions. Tina, in my opinion, there's so many twists in this and his life. He's like the Godfather, runs everything, controls everything, no sweat, tough job for the prosecution. I agree. My kid's personal Uber driver. Yes, just want to agree. Peter is amazing and helpful. Thank you so much. That's so nice. Nicole W., do you think the defense will put on a case? Why? Yes, I do. I think they're going to bring experts on to show what it actually means to have no DNA and no GSR. Maybe they'll put a timeline together. I definitely think they're going to put on a case. MP, sober and rational, logical people can't fathom that delaying exposure of AM could be motive, but they aren't putting themselves in the midst of a scared, desperate attorney who's likely high on opiates. I think that's fine. I think I could understand it coming from either point of view, and he snapped and things like that. I would like more of a connection to the murder. That's all. Leslie P. Peter, thank you so much for your coverage. I learned so much. My question wasn't AM charged with more than taking drugs, but being a part of a dealing scheme. I don't know. I haven't seen the drug charges. I have not seen the drug charges. Very possible. Jeremy Wilson, please follow the OnlyFans model trial. I will. I absolutely will. We've been following that case. We've got a couple Courtney Clenny videos already up on our Lawyer You Know channel. If you want to check those out, let me know what you think. Emily, what would have to happen for you to think AM testifies? Oof. He thinks he can just talk his way out of it, I guess. And he's going to explain away why he lied and that he was actually there till 8:45. And that actually, I mean, I think he could tell a story with a timeline of how exactly what he did makes sense and he couldn't have committed the murders. But he opens himself up to so much on cross. I don't think it's worth the risk. And to me, it would be interesting if the attorney general just did all this to bait him into testifying, to make sure they lock him up for the 99 other charges. Not, I don't think they would do that, but we heard Tinsley say they do all this stuff just to put pressure. Leslie P., what I gather from evidence is that the murders are very fast and Alec is at the kennels. Everything else falls in line, but the speed at which it happened gets me. Thoughts? It is so fast. Not just the murders. I mean, you can pull the triggers fast, but two separate guns would be so worth it. He couldn't have been holding them both in two hands. So it's like he did one and then he did the other. And then he had to clean everything up. And then he had to get in his car and drive to his mom's house. Deborah B. GE just left Maggie at the kennels. Why does he need to call her and telling her he is going to his mom's? Maybe he was there at 8:44, went back to the house, called her at 9:03 a few minutes later or whatever and told her he's going to go. I don't know. Maybe he killed her. Maybe he killed her and he was setting up his alibi. I don't know. But again, the state needs to prove to me what he did. That's where I'm at. CJ Martin, compare Alex's steps to your timeline. Crazy circumstantial case, but I think they will tie all this together. Do you think we hear from the housekeeper who cooked dinner the night of the murders? From Blanca, I think is her name. I don't know. Maybe we will. I think his steps on his phone, I thought he had no activity from like 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock, basically. So I don't know how his steps would really help if he left his phone in the other house, went to the kennels with them till 8:44, went back to the house, got changed, whatever, grabbed his phone, got in the car, went to mom's, texted at Maggie and went to mom's. So I don't know that his steps would really mean much. Asia. I could buy it happening in 10 minutes, but not him getting rid of everything so well that it's never found while leaving other things just lying around. It's pretty much where I'm at right now. Renee, the timeline is awesome. I think the strongest evidence yet. After the second 16-minute drive, there are two quick start stops, 10:01-ish. Maybe this is when he allegedly dumped Maggie's phone. They found it on the other side of the road. It could be that. It could be he was driving from the kennel to the house. A lot of things could happen that I'm not really sure. I really appreciate this super chat and you liking it because that's why I was late. I was trying to cobble it together with John before we started to give you something to look at to visualize what this timeline could look like. And obviously these lawyers are going to take a lot more time, make a much more convincing timeline on both sides. But I like to just provide with some things that could be used in closing argument to try to tie all this together. So I'm glad you found it helpful, Renee. Thank you. Katie Bailey, if acquitted, could they charge murder for hire or no due to double jeopardy? So theoretically, they could still charge him with conspiracy to commit murder. However, and we've talked about this on a couple other shows, if I represented Alec Murdoch in that case, my witness list would be the entire government's witness list in this case and say, you said Alec Murdoch did it, didn't you? You said all the evidence pointed to Alec Murdoch, didn't you? You said he wrapped it up in a raincoat and brought it back to his mom's house, didn't you? All the evidence already they're saying points to Alec Murdoch. They're not saying it points to anybody else. So to go through this terrible investigation again to say, well, now we actually think somebody else committed the murders and it was hired by Alec Murdoch, they'd have to have some pretty good evidence of that in order to do it. So in reality, I don't think it would ever happen unless they found some smoking gun, like an email and a personal check for 50 grand that said, kill my family on it. Beetle. He showered at the kennels with a hose. And what did he do with the clothes? What did he do with the guns? Did he have the change of clothes already with him? A lot of questions if that's the case. And why did they still not find anything at the kennels? And why was there still blood and biological matter everywhere? Miss Michael, I have a question. He admitted he touched both of them, right? So why isn't there any blood on the bottom of his shoes? He walked to each body to check their pulses. He stepped in their blood. I don't know. Why wasn't there blood on his hands? I don't know. Did he lie about that? And if he did lie about that, does that mean he committed the murders? Keely Hanahan. Also, how did he not have any evidence in the car? I agree. If he had the sopping wet clothes or blood or GSR or whatever in the car, I agree with you. Kim S., if something comes out that he had help or hired someone that he didn't pull the trigger, could he still be found guilty in this trial? No. I mean, if something comes out, the state has to either prove right now that he committed these first degree murders, not that he hired somebody. And I just explained the circumstances as to whether or not they could file charges of conspiracy later. Emily, who do you think did kill them? Speculation. I know. I mean, I would think if he was going to be behind it, I think he would have hired somebody to do it, maybe two somebodies. Monique Favitt, if trial ended today and I'm a juror, I would have to vote not guilty as possibility he did it equals reasonable doubt. I agree with you. Tiffany Nicole, thank you for the super chat. Leslie P., if he had help, it would be hard to still murder that fast with some evidence. It is crazy. It would be emotional. How could it happen so fast? That's a tough one for me. KJ, it's much more likely that he left at 9:03 or 9:06 or whatever. All this happens then, and they're gone within the hour that he's gone by the time he gets back. He stood outside the feed room, shot Paul through the window, KJ says. I've seen some reenactments that are kind of interesting about it. Jay, are there lesser charges on the table for him being responsible but not actually doing it? I don't believe so. Amy Lynn, Peter, your recaps are great. No one told Alex if these murders happened, he would be off the hook for anything. I agree. No life insurance, no money gain. There is no time for him to get rid of everything. Not possible. Yeah, if he would have killed some people at the law firm or some people that knew about what he was doing, then that would make more sense. But we don't even have any information that Paul or Maggie knew what was going on. Truth be told, how far is his mother's house? Between 15 and 20 minutes. And according to this, it took him 16 minutes to drive there and 16 minutes to drive back. Ximena, I don't think he killed them. I think someone wanted to hurt him. It does not make sense. Being a thief does not make him a murderer. Jay Scott, are there lesser charges on the table, but not him actually doing it? I think I already read that one. Lisa Hale, but why did he lie? He was there. I agree. This would be a big hangup for me. Especially if I wasn't a lawyer and didn't fully understand beyond a reasonable doubt and how the burden of the law worked, this would be the hardest question to answer. Like, he lied probably because he did it. That's what I would think. Gingy Problems. Hey, lawyer, you know, my daily message. I am still so skeptical of the state, but I re-listened to the 911. You can hear the GMC no seatbelt tone throughout. He was in the car, not sure what it means, but doubt. So he didn't have the seatbelt on, but there was no GSR found in the car. So I think he was already changed into the other clothes. I don't know. The state's got to prove it to us, right? We can't guess our way to the answer. Phyllis Wall, but he was a far enough distance from the targets and could shoot with no blood on him. The tarp covered him to blurry the trace because he hid it in his mom's closet. I don't think anybody testified that he was far away from them. I think everybody testified that you would expect somebody to get biological matter on them if they fired these shots and committed these murders. Zamlot, two guns throws me off. I think he hired killers. I agree. From the jump, the two guns thing was really weird for me. Sawyer Harrison, what if gunshots woke AM up, but he didn't realize it? It's possible, especially with Paul always hunting and loving to shoot hogs and stuff. Brad Walker, prosecution has got to start building this puzzle for the jury and soon. Defense is building strength. Side note, Jim has been carrying a lot of the defensive crosswork lately. I agree. They take certain parts pretty clearly. DC Primetime, I think politically protected, check out DUI guy. Okay. DUI guy says he's politically protected. Interesting. JR, how much blood are we talking about? Was he like carry or more spray? That would influence me if a 10-minute shower would get the job done or not. So if you listen to some of these people explain the scene, it was atrocious and there was blood everywhere. Ms. Escobar, I think he paid someone for the murders with the money from the bank account. Love from Texas. Yeah, I mean, that doesn't seem too hard to believe. Beautiful Messy, I'm not a lawyer and I know habeas corpus. Yes, I agree. You should know. I mean, a lawyer should know that stuff, but I don't know. But we think he's a criminal mastermind and able to cover this up. Azam, thank you for the super sticker. Lisa Wilson, CIA author of Spy the Lie, heard the 911 call and found multiple signs of deception. Nicole W., opinion on AF last-minute guilty plea during jury selection, Aiden Fucci. I think he's going to hope it helps with the judge because if he gets 40 years, he could get out before he's dead. And I also think he was cooked and probably didn't want the whole world to watch and listen to his trial and hate him even more. Truth be told, 844 to 859, why doesn't he hear all the gunshots? Good question. Is he showering? Is he changing? Is he sleeping? But again, Maggie was still having steps on her phone at 853 to 855. So maybe it was just 855 to 859, or maybe they weren't shot until after 903 when he left. I don't know. Marjorie Haskin, I'm in the minority, but I'm not convinced that that's him on Snapchat. A lot of these guys sound the same to me, and there were rumors that was a caretaker. Interesting. So a lot of them do sound the same. I do agree with that. Lois, Alex didn't do it. I think it was a hit. Truth Blood, each bit of testimony is not enough. Add it together and he's in trouble. That's what the state's hoping happens. Stina G, I'm stuck on the search of the house. One officer glancing around with people trailing her. Sneaky people have hidey holes. She could have been nervous and missed a lot of things that he disposed of later. And while this could absolutely be true and be a great explanation to what we're dealing with, this would have to mean he was not guilty if they blew the investigation and can't prove the case. Brad Walker, that is why they are pushing everyone to say he always had his phone and left it never except the night of the murder. Great point. It's a great point. Everybody said he was always on his phone, yet for an hour he didn't have it. Although we know he was out on the ATV and doing stuff with the trees and then out at the kennels without it for an hour. I don't know. Hey, Brian Koberger had his phone off during the time of the murders as well. So maybe that's a common theme. CJ, if I'm not mistaken, there are hella steps before the car leaves for mom's, only a few minutes, but 278 steps. If I'm recalling my notes correctly, I'm home. My notes are at the office. Do you guys want me to check mine? We'll look into this on another video. How about that? So I don't bore you guys while I look it up now. We'll look into those steps of his on another video. And you can, when you're at the office, double check your notes. Even naked, he could have done it alone. Nope. Sorry. He couldn't have done it alone. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of how I feel. Greg Hall Art, thanks for the super chat. Gab Liz, what was the judge mad at the end of the day today? I assume prosecution, since their witness couldn't testify to their own report. I think he is frustrated at how the exhibits are being handled and how stuff seems so unorganized. And he was annoyed that we were sitting there for minute after minute after minute where they couldn't figure out what was what. And if there was anything added to this, he was like, you know what? Jury, just go home. I think he was frustrated at the lawyers generally. Natalie O, laid tarp, then raincoat, guns, etc. Left stuff in mom's smokehouse before going in mom's. Got rid of the stuff at a later date. But he didn't get rid of the tarp or the raincoat. Maybe the raincoat really does have nothing to do with this, and that's why it was left in the mom's closet. And it would be kind of ironic if that's what sunk him, if he really was able to get rid of anything else. DC primetime. CDT wanted to save face. Typical narcissist, couldn't deal with Paul and Maggie being publicly disgraced and impoverished. Pamela Wages. He lies because his lips are moving. Stephanie, could he be such a pathological liar type that he said all the, I checked their pulse and all the other things don't add up because that's what he thought would sound good. Good timeline. Thank you. Thank you so much for the timeline compliment. I was thinking this too. I was thinking that he made up these lies after the fact. Even if he didn't do it, I could understand somebody like him lying about it because he's such a liar. And he wanted to be like, whoa, I don't want them to think it was me. I'm just going to say I didn't go to the kennels. I want him to think I care. I'm going to say I took their pulses. I could see that being a real explanation. Gingy Probs, I try to filter all the testimony evidence through. If I was innocent and on trial, how would I respond to this evidence hypo? I don't want him convicted on bad evidence because then it could happen to anyone. I think this is a great way to look at it, Gingy Probs. Great way to look at it. Thank you, Jacqueline, for the super sticker. Leslie P. Peter, you think he had help or it was someone else? I don't see him right now. Like, I don't see the motive for killing them. Seems like he loved them, had a great relationship with them. It seems like he could have gone to prison for all the financial stuff and Paul would have at least still been by him because Paul's been a screw up and screwed up lots of things and could have even felt like guilty that he was the reason for a lot of the financial crap. So I don't think Paul was going to hate him for the financial stuff. Maggie maybe, but I don't see it based on how everybody's explaining their relationships. I think it was someone else. If I had to guess right now, what I think is most plausible, it was someone else to get at Alec. Mrs. Escobar, conspiracy, Buster did it. I've heard people say that as well. I have no idea. Angie Cook, thank you for the super chat. Leslie P., guys, regarding steps, I had 20K steps and was so impressed until I realized that I rode my horse earlier that day. He really had the steps. So I do not have trust in steps, not clear to me. Leslie P., guess what? The expert on steps also said steps are not always reliable. Steps sometimes are not picked up accurately. They did talk about how someone could cheat and he said, probably not. It picks up steps better than that. But we all know, we've all seen somebody trying to close their rings on their Apple Watch and they start doing stuff like this. So I think this is a great point, Leslie. And thank you so much for the super chat. A lot of new members here, Terry and David, Adventures of Aaron and Paddington Dog, Mrs. Escobar, Pat's Cats, Jay, welcome, and Nurse Heather is a new member as well. Welcome all the new members. It's going to be fun. We've got some cool stuff coming up when we hit 200K and the members only video for February. Kathy Rupright, although I was expecting this trial to be over Friday. I think he did it, but the investigation was flawed and they won't prove it. Wonder if there is floorboards or space in the walls or shed or the kennel. I agree. I really want to know where the heck he hid everything if he did do it. Mr. RN, thank you for the super sticker. Jay, my new favorite guy is you, Pete. You rock. Thank you, Jay. That's awesome. K. Kim D. Agree, the prosecution is not connecting the dots, but listening to his jail calls to Buster, he never once says, we need to find out who did this. That's pretty important. Although there was a reward and he didn't get arrested till later, so maybe there was already a lot of talk of that, but I think that's a great point. I definitely think that's a great point. And I'm wondering how much of the jail calls we're going to hear. I've heard some of them, but not all of them. Jojo, thank you so much for the super sticker. All right, we did this in an hour and 15 minutes, so not too long. I appreciate all you guys joining as usual. This was a very interesting night. And it was a day where we did learn things. Some things became less clear, it felt like. Hopefully the prosecution will clear it up if, in fact, they have enough evidence to convict him. Hopefully you guys enjoyed this. CJ Martin just joined at the last minute. Welcome to the membership crew. And everybody, hit that like button. I'm hoping we get, 10,000 likes on this video. Let's try to get 10,000 likes. Hit that like button and subscribe if you haven't already. We're working our way towards 200K for some fun stuff coming up with that. I appreciate y'all joining me. Have a good night. Until tomorrow. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Lawyer You Know podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, which I hope you did, here's what to do next. Give it a share, rate, and review the show on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify, and make sure you subscribe to the show in the listening app of your choice. Follow me on all social media platforms at Tragos Law and join the Lawyer You Know YouTube channel and community where you can ask me questions live on all of these cases. If you've got an idea for a specific topic or you have a personal legal question on an injury case, whether it's a car accident, trip and fall, wrongful death, or catastrophic injury case, please email me at lawyeryouknow@gmail.com. All of these links I just mentioned are included in the show notes section of this episode. So until next time, I'm Peter Tragos.